A deal has been reached in the Senate that's expected to clear the way to a vote on President Obama's nominee to replace Eric Holder as Attorney General. Loretta Lynch's nomination has been held up for months by Republicans who wanted to pass a sex trafficking bill first, just the latest example of gridlock in Washington. And we want to talk about that and more with the former majority leader of the U.S. Senate, Mississippi Republican Trent Lott, who's with us from Washington, where he's now at the law firm Squire Patton Boggs. Senator Lott, welcome.
Thank you very much. I'm glad to be back at the NPR headquarters. They're a lot nicer than they used to be when I came.
It's a different building, yes. It's much nicer. Well, I want to ask you about a lot of things, including the future of the GOP. But I do want to ask you about race, given all that is going on right now in the wake of Ferguson and everything else. We remember that you had to leave your leadership in the Senate in 2002 after making some comments at Strom Thurmond's 100th birthday party. You had said that if his 1948 presidential bid had been successful, the country would have been better off. Of course, he was a segregationist. He opposed civil rights legislation. And after all that has happened since then, what do you think about that moment and what you said back in 2002?
Well, first of all, I chose my words, you know, improperly. And just trying to honor a 100-year-old man at his birthday. And a lot of people, Democrats and Republicans, have told him, you know, over the years, oh, Strom, you'd have been a great president. And if you look at his record in the Senate, he was very active in the defense area, supporting a strong national defense, making sure our men and women are taken care of as veterans. And on budget, he was very strong in trying to make sure that we live within our means. And when I saw him in the Senate, which didn't begin until 1980, I saw a man that was working hard to do a lot of the right things for the country. So, you know, I think I made a mistake. I didn't want it to reflect on the Senate, the party, or the president at the time, and I stepped aside. But I learned a lot of lessons from that, and I went on and tried to do a good job for my state and my country.
So when you look back on that, do you beat yourself up over it, or do you think this was unfair to me, or how do you?
Oh, I think it was unfair the way it was handled. Certainly, I didn't intend anything malicious or racist. So, you know, I made a mistake. You make mistakes in life. You learn from those. You move forward.
Do you wish you had stayed in the leadership throughout that and tried to weather the storm?
I did the right thing at the time for myself and for my country. But it had gone on, you know, for a couple of weeks.
Yeah.
You know, I had people. It was disturbing my neighborhood, my hometown. I had media camped out into my driveway. And I just didn't think that was what was the most unfair part about it, the inconvenience and the problems it caused my family and my neighbors and a lot of other people. So, but I think that what you need to do is when you make a mistake, acknowledge it, and then try to make the best of it. Sometimes you have to step aside. Sometimes you can, make it clear that it didn't properly reflect your feelings, and you move on.
I want to ask you about the Republican Party today versus the Republican Party when you were there. And one of the things that's different is you didn't have the Tea Party.
No, I didn't. I had some very conservative members, but most of the time, my challenge as majority leader was more on the more moderate side of the senators, making sure that senators like Jim Jeffords of Vermont and Olympia Snowe of Maine and Arlen Specter of Pennsylvania voted with the Republicans. But also, I worked very hard at staying connected to Democrats on the other side of the aisle. Now, members of the Senate hardly cross the center aisle to go to one side of the—
Why? Why is that?
The times we're in. Maybe it's just the people. Maybe it's the times. But I used to go across the aisle, and sometime Tom Daschle, who was my counterpart on the Democratic side in their leadership position, didn't particularly like it. But I'd go over there and work with people like Senator John Breaux, who has been my partner since I retired from Louisiana. He was a Democrat, but he was a more moderate Democrat. He was one I could talk to on a lot of issues. I was able to get things done because many times I might lose three or four Republicans of the more moderate to liberal side, but I would pick up, you know, a half a dozen Democrats that were more conservative on the Democratic side.
So there just aren't any moderates anymore, or not as many.
Well, right. If you look at the makeup of the Congress, particularly the Senate, used to there was a clear center, sort of a purple. If you look at that now, it's gone white. There's very little middle. The Democratic Party has moved significantly to the left. The Republican Party has moved to the right as a whole, both of them. And then you have people way out on the flanks who can really mess things up. One senator can cause a lot of problems by, you know, putting a hold on a nominee or by getting up and threatened to filibuster or actually filibustering. It makes it very tough for the leaders to get the job done. But also, I think it's important that leaders communicate. It's important that President Obama, if he wants a trade bill, he's going to have to engage. He's going to have to talk directly to the senators. I used to talk to Bill Clinton all the time when I was majority leader. And when I was the whip in the House in the 80s, I could call President Reagan any time of the day and get him on the phone and say, Mr. President, we're working on, you know, the cruise missile issue. We got problems with these five or six congressmen. Would you please call and try to convince him? He would do it. That kind of thing doesn't happen now. But it also...
Well, and the White House, by the way, would say it's the Republicans who are not communicating enough with us, and that when we have gone out on a limb and tried to make a deal, and there have been those moments over the years, that they'll back out at the last second.
Well, you know, maybe that did happen some early on. But, you know, when you're a leader, you can't just quit and go away if you don't get your way once or twice or three. You got to come back. Bill Clinton was dogged. When we finally got the budget agreement between a Republican Congress and the Democrat President Clinton, it was a long negotiation, but we got an agreement. We got a balanced budget and surplus. The best thing that I had to do or deal with when I was majority leader was I had a leader on the other side of the aisle, Tom Daschle from South Dakota, that I could talk to. We were actually friends. I tried my best not to surprise him. And sometime if I overplayed my hand, I'd actually go to his office and say, hey, Tom, I didn't do that exactly right. Let's put that behind us and let me see what I can do to be helpful to make up for that.
So but we you don't think that's happening now Harry Reid and Mitch McConnell?
No.
But you know both of them. You worked in the Senate with them.
I consider them both friends. When I was the majority leader, Harry Reid was a whip. I worked with him every day.
So why don't they talk to each other?
They're just like oil and water. They have different kinds of personalities. But, you know, when the Senate is so close and has been so close for so long now, every senator gets up every morning saying, you know, if I do the right thing or if I don't cast a bad vote, I could be a committee chairman next year. Every day they're trying to figure out how can I get to be the majority leader or the chairman of the committee when what they should be doing is what can I do for my state and my country today?
Who do you like for 2016 at this point?
A Republican.
Which one?
Well, we're going to have a large field. I really feel inspiration for Marco Rubio, quite frankly. I think he's got a great message. I think there's a certain Reagan-esque atmosphere around him. The fact that he is a Hispanic is a political plus, but that's not why I'm attracted to him. I just think he's a dynamic young man. He's got a wonderful message. I don't really know Governor Walker personally. I like a lot of what he says and a lot of what he's done. I've, of course, been pretty close to the Bush family, and I'm watching Jeb. I'm not committed to any of them, but I think probably at the gate, unless Kasich. I think if Kasich gets in, I'm long term friends with John. He's been successful at everything he's done as a
governor of Ohio. Just got a big reelection.
Yeah,
landslide.
Yeah, he's done a great job as governor of Ohio. Took a state that was really in debt, and now they've got a balanced budget. They've got a huge rainy day fund. He's cut taxes, but he also has a heart.
One more question while we've got you here, because I know you were part of the barbershop quartet called the Singing Senators. And while we're talking 2016, this is for our regular weekly segment about 2016. This is what we got the Boston University students in the Timepiece Barbershop Quartet to do for us.
Here and now, 2016.
Your thoughts, Trent Lott.
Close harmony. You can't beat barbershop quartet singing. You know, music has been an important part of my life. I've been singing all my life and sang with a group all through college, same four guys called the Chancellors. We sang together for 50 years until our bass, my roommate, federal judge Alan Pepper, passed away a couple of years ago. And then in the Senate, one of the things I tried to do when I was in a leadership position is try to loosen up the Senate a little bit. The Senate's a little bit too stodgy, a bunch of old guys in blue suits. And so I did a number of things to try to loosen it up a little bit and show the American people that, you know, we're real people too, and have a little fun. And so that's why I created the Singing Senators, and we did a CD called Let Freedom Sing. And I have a Scottish background, so I established April 6th as Tartan Day in America. And we had the William Wallace Award, which I received, and we gave the award to Tony Blair and to Sean Connery. Hmm. I was the first senator, best we can determine in the history of the Senate, to wear a kilt on the floor of the Senate.
Really?
Yeah. And Kit Bond, a senator from Missouri, said it was the ugliest legs he'd ever seen on the floor of the Senate. But those things, you can honor your heritage, you can have a little fun, and enjoy each other's company, and actually it helps you legislate. That's one reason why I don't think they're doing what they should be doing now. They don't really know each other.
Barely ever wear kilts.
They don't. They don't wear kilts. They don't socialize. It affects your conduct. Of all places in America, should there be civility in the United States Senate? I think there should be.
Trent Lott, former senator from Mississippi, former leader of the majority in the U.S. Senate. Thank you so much for speaking with us.
My pleasure.